We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Absolutely extraordinary. And Glenn's backlighting. Oh, he just has the most sensitive touch. Jim, are you listening?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. This episode is the 17-Year Itch, Season 1, Episode 8. Here are your hosts, Tara Ariano, and special guest host, John Ramos.
Hi, John.
Hey, Tara.
So happy that you're... don't talk to Dave. He's not part of it. We're so happy that you're here this
Gladly
week.
So.
to sub for our dear Sarah D. Bunting, who is on vacation. We didn't want to miss a week, so that's why you have joined us. And why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about your relationship with the show. How far back does it go? Tell us all.
I did watch it when it first aired, not from the beginning, but, you know, it was so kind of easily repeated back then that I watched it. I kind of, you know, enjoyed the Brenda years more, as we all did. But, you know, kind of lumped it in with that, you know, fairly fond memories of, like, Melrose Place and other, you know, such shows, such 90s shows. I have to say, watching it now, it is so much worse than I remember. And I had two... Here are my two revelations that probably sum up my relationship with the show right now. One is that I completely understand how it spawned long-form recap culture. Because there's so much wrong with it that you just can't leave anything out. Right. You have to give a comprehensive dissection of what everything is, everything that's wrong with it.
Yes.
The other, and I'm kind of proud of this one, is that I realized that Brandon was a little bit ahead of his time because his personality type, I finally identified it was bothering me, but it's internet commenter that has to register his outrage about any and all subjects.
Oh my God, you're with so right.
His voice dialed up to 11 is his all caps.
And also, in addition to that, he thinks he's an expert on something when he encounters it for the very first time.
Yes.
Like, he thinks he knows it inside and out and has to tell
everybody.
He's
every freshman at university.
Yes. Oh my God, he totally is.
And he'll be engaged in, like, a completely rude conversation on his part, and then when someone wants to back out, he's like, how dare you leave?
Yeah, he's the original mansplainer. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's get into this. A 17-year itch. This is kind of a weird one for you to join us on this very off model in that the A story is all about Jim and Cindy, which I don't think they ever did again. Maybe once. So let's dispense with the C and B plots first, because yes, after our last episode that was all A story and nothing else, this tries to do two subplots. One very, very feebly, the other 50% maybe. So the C story is the school DJ is leaving. The person that we hear every week in our outro is quitting the
and
job.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!
That's what he's saying to the school. See ya. He's leaving his post. So they're going to have auditions. Naturally, I think we all know who wants to try out in clip number 2.
Imagine being the school DJ, everyone being forced to listen to you.
You should. Your mouth's big enough.
Yeah, right. Come on. Freshman DJ? Dream on. Come on, man. Why not?
Why not?
Because he'll be competing with me.
Arrest my case.
John, your thoughts?
Well, I really wanted to clip that one because being forced to listen to you is, if unintentional, incredibly apt as far as David Silver's DJ skills go. Yeah. I also noticed that the DJ competition is a little bit white, given that Steve and Donna are the only other people we see trying out for it.
Well, I think the school's one and only black student is the one who's leaving, so there aren't really a lot of options.
Right. Sure.
Perhaps. Anyway, they really don't talk about that at all again until the end when Donna tries to do an audition and sucks, and then Steve gets on and he also has problems, and that's clip number 3.
Is this thing on? Good. Because watch out, world. Here comes the voice of your choice, Steve Sanders. Silver tongue, golden hair, spirit of young America. Voice.
Yeah. Steve glances voice. Up and sees everyone is looking at him through the DJ booth, and he chokes.
Voice.
Why isn't he talking?
Mike Fright.
Don't stop.
Keep talking. So why'd Kelly Taylor dunk you again?
She what? Get out of my face and off this mic.
Why, so we can savor the scintillating sound of dead air again?
Y'all, West Beverly, this is DJ Dave. Now, I'm not Vanilla Ice, but chill out and be brave, because I'll rock the microphone for you over the air till you say, who's that freshman? Check him out. He's aware.
God, I've created a monster.
Okay.
lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, I've seen stage fright, and stage fright is a thing, sure, but this is like a Cindy Brady staring into the monitor breakdown.
Yes.
And just like, turn around. Was there a shade?
Okay.
Like, close it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He seems fine when he doesn't see the people. So I don't know. And Scott, I've created a monster. Do you know what that expression means? Cause I'm not sure you do. Like, I mean, this rap is no better or worse than the one that he got pegged in the hallway with suddenly everyone is into this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, so yeah, I don't know. And kind of overall, like I've noticed that when 90210 does do C plots, they're like, it's just garbage recycling for all the characters who weren't in the A or B plots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Tara?
Well, I you can see on the show page, it'll be in the images, in the visual aids, but there's two fashion crimes in this scene also. Steve is wearing this terrible mustardy black and yellow shirt that, as you'll see when in a side-by-side, is very reminiscent of Theo Huxtable's Gordon Gartrell shirt that Denise tries to make for him on The Cosby Show. Maybe in season one, definitely early on. You'll see it. You'll know it when you see it if the name Gordon Gartrell doesn't ring a bell for you. And second, David is wearing a matching, I almost can't tell unless you really look at it, because he's wearing a necktie that is the exact same print as his shirt. So it's print on print, and it's not okay. All right.
Will not be the last fashion crime. But just
not.
One other thought about, you know, going back to the whiteness of the DJ contestants.
Please.
Early in the episode, they had this little montage of like all these people dancing in the courtyard, and
it looked
like a Benetton ad in terms of diversity. So where are those people?
Yeah, I don't know. That's B-roll that is used. I almost clipped it for this episode, and then I didn't. They keep reusing that footage over and over.
Oh my
again.
God!
There's also one of like a girl in a band jacket with a skirt too. That usually they're back to back. They were not really shooting a lot in this season, I don't think. Moving on, unless you have more to add.
I was just going to say, at least with the B plot, which we're about to get to, there are attempts to tie it thematically into the A plot,
definitely.
Even though they're not very good. But
yes.
The C plot is just absolute garbage, like I said.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that. There is some crossover between A and B. I tried to keep them as separated as we could. But Miss Rye, who is over this season a lot more than I remembered, she's not just Brenda's English teacher teaching a French book in translation, the Les Miserables.
Is that her name?
Miss Rye, yes.
Yeah, okay.
She's also the the Blaze advisor, and she has a friend who, well, I'll just, let's just get right into it in clip number 4.
So what do you think? How would you like to participate in my professor friend's twin study at the university? She's got a couple of sets of identicals from Beverly High, but she's desperate for fraternals.
College study, cool.
No way. I hate those zoos. I'm not going to be a guinea pig.
Well, these particular guinea pigs get money and a time off from school, but I respect your feelings.
Well, no, now, wait a minute.
This could be interesting. Now, I've read about those studies where they send one far away. That's what we're talking about here, Miss Rye, right? Brenda in Siberia?
Oh, well, anything for science, right?
Okay, my first reaction to this, and then I'll turn it over to you, John, is what?
Sure.
What does that mean? Like, Brenda has this totally weird reaction to that line with, like, she bats her eyes in this weird flirty way. This is going to be a recurring thing in this plot line, too, that there's a lot of, like, underlining Brenda and Brandon as couple stand-ins in a weird way.
Oh, God, yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, co-signed, like, I never found Brenda to be particularly self-deprecating, and it's not like Brandon was really doing much more than ribbing there.
Yeah.
But she's absolutely mugging for the cameras on that reaction. It just seems really weird to me from what we know about her character.
An eye roll, maybe, would have worked. I don't know what this flirtiness is.
Even the same line could have worked, but not with that reaction, I don't think.
It's really weird.
The other thing, my other comments on the scene are, my professor's friend's study at the university, like, nice to be really specific.
In town.
And Brandon started to work up a usual head of steam, you know, on a soapbox. I hate those zoos. Like, which zoos? Like, what do you... But then she just shut him down with, like, the offer of money.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the solution when Brandon starts to spin out. Just, like, throw 10 bucks at him and he'll shut up. Weird.
So meanwhile, then we cut back later when we pick this up. It's a reference to after dinner when Cindy has just had this old friend that she's connected with, which we'll get to in the A plot. And again, weird. Well, let's just play it. Clip number 5.
Wow. How'd it get to be so late? Brandon and I turn into twin guinea pigs first thing in the morning.
Yeah, they're going to shock us into pretending Brenda's as good as I am.
But we all know that I'm really better.
Sometimes they're just like an old married couple.
Twins. Double the pleasure. Photographer's dream.
What?
Like, don't textualize it, Cindy. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Also, why are they a photographer's dream? They just look like a brother. They're fraternal twins. Like, leaving aside the whole question
too.
Of whether it's interesting to photograph identical twins... Why? What is inherently so interesting about these two kids who look nothing alike, by the way?
Well, maybe it's Brandon's views on Tiananmen Square, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Oh, yeah. And I also, Sarah clipped from one of the previous episodes, Brandon in that green button down that we keep seeing Brenda in. And in fact, she is wearing it in this scene. Proof that they did recycle wardrobe early on.
Nice catch.
Yeah. So then they get their initial reviews for this study, and they find out that basically what we learn from them is that Brandon is superficial and Brenda is really naive. So, but at this point, all we know is that she's better at math and he's better at English, which will come up again actually in an interesting continuity, which is rare when they get their SAT results later. But anyway, they go to this art opening, and Brandon says this, clip number 6.
So, Bryn, what's your brilliant, deep, quantitative analysis here, huh?
A woman. A very lonely woman. And what's your superficial word on the subject, Brandon?
I don't know. She looks confused. She looks lost.
No, you're both wrong. It's called dancing with myself. See?
Okay, way to solve art, Kelly. Good job.
Yeah, Kelly's the one that reads in the group. Like, surprising, but fine.
Yeah, I don't understand what a quantitative analysis is supposed to have to do with this moment or this piece of art, in quotation marks. But anyway, that plus Brandon's stupid Marlon Brando imitation for no reason at all really makes this unbearable.
Yeah, I mean, the scene is so... tied into a lot of stuff that's going on the A plot. It's hard to even like talk about this theme running through it, yeah. But I agree.
All right. So let's dispense with this and get on to the meat of the episode with it. Just how this winds up. Brenda and Brandon have their final meeting with the professor friend of Miss Rye, who's running this study, who is Mrs. Teasley, by the way. I don't know why they're trying to act like she's Mrs. She's Harriet Strathmore, because we're going to see her in like a season. And anyway, playing a totally other character. Brenda and Brandon think they fucked it up because they kept biffing all of the stupid study tests and whatever. And so Ms. Rye has to tell them things are actually not so bad in clip number 7.
Ah, just the twins I was looking for. What's wrong?
Things are a little rough at home right now.
I'm sorry if we embarrassed you with your friend. We were not the most ideal subjects.
Yeah, maybe we're not even twins. That'll be today's family zinger.
No. Harriet thought you were great. She put it, two of a kind. I mean, she thinks you're a real team.
Your family's very important to you. Appreciate each other's strengths.
At least we've got each other.
Yeah, helps being a team. Wish Mom and Dad were.
I mean, first off, what does any of that have to do with a scientific study? And secondly, what we didn't play is that Brandon took the professor's head off.
Yeah. Well, that's
in,
coming.
You know, another soapbox moment. Oh, it's in the other. Yeah,
it's in the other story.
But it's just weird that she's like, "No, you were so great.
Yeah,
like,
you're great at being twins." What? Also, don't compare yourself to Mom and Dad. You're never going to be Mom and Dad. Oh. You're not a couple. And also, you will see in several GIFs how handsy Jason Priestley is with Shanna Doherty in this episode. Like, I think he thinks he's trying to be comforting to her because of what we're about to hear in the A-plot, but he just ends up, like, grabbing her by the back of the neck a lot and, like, doing a tight massage. It's really not a brotherly move at all, as you will see
and
in the GIFs.
We're not even close to done with the examples of twincest in this episode.
Okay,
so
no.
Or just weird, inappropriate stuff. So anyway.
That's so horrible. Okay. So before we get into the A-plot, I want to just give a trigger warning. There is talk of sex after 40 a lot. Not explicitly, but in ways that are almost more cringy than if you're explicit. You will hear what we mean. Do not say we didn't warn you.
Yeah, and they do involve Jim, too, if that adds to the trigger, just so you know.
Right. So it's Jim and Cindy's 17th anniversary. They've just come back from a disappointing dinner where Jim was bitching that it's too expensive. And I guess because it's their anniversary, it's their annual sex appointment. That's clip number 8.
Have to work on our anniversary?
The IRS doesn't know it's our anniversary. But I'll take a personal exemption.
Accountant humor.
Remember our first anniversary?
We
ate dinner in bed.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry.
Do you really like the ties I gave you?
I'll tell you all about it. Later.
Oh, Jim. Oh. I mean, can we talk a little first?
Let's talk.
I just need to feel a little intimate.
I know. I'm sorry, honey. I gotta put another hour of work in. I'll go downstairs so I don't bother you.
John, why don't you start us off?
There's so much and stuff that happened before. I mean, the most... Oh, God. What can I even say? It's just paralyzing. So he tries to get a leg over, but he can't give her 5 minutes when she said she wants to talk, right? Yes. That's one thing.
Yes. He has plenty of time. He can take an hour away from work to have sex with her, although whatever. He says he has an hour more of work, but yeah, he has time to fuck. He doesn't have time to have a conversation.
Right. And we learned earlier that they waited 2 hours for dinner. So aside from the fact that most restaurants take reservations, like, if you're so busy that you can't spend 5 minutes talking to your wife, maybe you shouldn't be waiting for 2 hours for dinner, even on your anniversary.
Yeah.
go someplace that'll seat you immediately. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But on the other side, like, he's an accountant and this is tax season. Like, surely you have been through this before.
Yeah.
Like, did your anniversary move?
But now everything's different, John. They live
everything
in Beverly
is
Hills.
Different. It's true.
Anyway.
Well, this is like the twin frustration of this episode because it's, sorry, twin frustration. But on the one hand, you've got this problem that seems completely artificial considering they've been married for 17 years. That has nothing to do with the fact that they live in Beverly Hills now, really.
Yes.
But on the other hand, if this is how they talk to each other, they should get divorced.
Oh, God. So, yeah, please look at the visual aids because Carol Potter obviously has been waiting all season to do this episode. And she, like, digs into the sexual frustration of it all with, like, so much gusto. She's actually great in this storyline, considering how cringy it is, except for one terrible moment. But anyway.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. So, oh, my God. Cindy, and I will also say that the episode begins with a really slow push-in on Cindy taking off her wedding ring when they get back. Yes. Like, symbolism.
Right. All right, so Cindy and her hair combs and Anna go to a garden center, like a nursery, and some creep is shooting her in his safari vest at the fucking garden center.
Oh.
Anyway, it turns out it's this guy Glenn that she went to college with. She introduces Anna in the white, guiltiest way possible as, this is my assistant. Like, whatever. She works at your house. Give her a rest. I guess she is, but this guy Glenn is a photographer. He knows all about Cindy and Jim's marriage because he read about it in the alumni magazine. Like, I would love to read that issue. I'm sure it's super interesting. But she invites him over for dinner, and he's regales everybody with stories of his past glories, and we get this in clip number 9.
The other guys and I barely got the exposed film out on time.
Tiananmen Square sounds intense.
He's got such a chip view on history now, you guys. Thanks,
Glenn.
Oh,
my God. So reverent.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah, so we find out that the three of them met in college, that actually Cindy was going out with Glenn at the time, and then he introduced her to Jim, and they got together. They all were working on the literary magazine at the time, and Jim was thinking he was going to be a poet, and somehow has ended up an accountant instead because practicalities, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, not great. They stay up really, really late. We get to see Jim's bedhead as he wakes up in bed without Cindy and creeps down to the stairs to spy on them in the living room where they're just talking.
My God. With this soon face as I can see stairs from the staircase.
Yes, but it's not great. So Glenn decides he wants to show Cindy my L.A., and they go out. And I have to think this dialogue is all improvised because it's even terribler than usual, and that's clip number 10.
Our lives could get set here.
I'm sorry, clip number 11. College. Sorry, clip number 11.
Your name.
Oh, you wish. You gotta see LA in a convertible. Otherwise, you'll miss it.
I love it. I had no idea. Oh, great color.
Everything is so vibrant, alive. We are.
It's like being in the mall.
This is?
Oh, it's.
Not Minnesota. So the good news about it being so transient here is that things and people don't get stuck. You've got to scratch the surface here. There are plenty of folks doing interesting, cutting-edge work. It is a different world.
Glenn, in your convertible.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just so, it's so cliched, and it's all of the, like, he lives in Venice, apparently, so he's
of
just
course he took her to Venice. I have it in my notes.
Yes, and they walk on a bridge in the canal, they look at some murals, it's all very cliche, blah, blah. So,
I mean, you know, and Venice has it's not for me, but I can't imagine that would be super appealing to Cindy, no matter what's going on with Jim.
No.
Like,
no, take her to Pasadena or something.
Seriously. God.
What I screwed up is I backtracked. I missed the first clip of Brenda after the dinner with Glenn, when he's already tried to butter her up by saying he wants to shoot them together, but Brenda is still suspicious of his motives, and that's clip number 10.
Our lives could get set here.
Your
dad met at college. Don't you ever wonder how people stay together all that time?
I think when you find the right person like Mom and Dad did, it just happens.
Yeah, but don't you even think about how Mom and Dad found each other? I mean, they're so far apart.
It's like they're so different. They're the same.
Yeah, well, they didn't seem so similar at 3 o'clock this morning when Mom was downstairs alone with Glenn. You know, she never stays up that late.
I thought we buried this one already.
Two things. First off, one of the very few things I like about this episode is that Brenda is clued in to what's going on to with Glenn and her mom, mm-hmm. because it's super obvious.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. Well, I do understand it because it's Brandon, but he's so like willfully blind about it. I don't get it. Can we also talk about Brenda's outfit in this scene?
Yes, because there's a picture. She's wearing this,
okay.
this blouse with like a full like English equestrian scene on the front of it. It's so strange. And like this weird half a bolo tie at her neck. I don't understand it.
And green boots, too, with black jeans and the black shirt with this like shiny print on it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No. All right, so Glenn, the smooth-talking gigolo, gets Cindy back to his apartment and tries to, I don't know, seduce her with his art or whatever. He invites her, and then she goes home, and she has to dodge another sexual overture from Jim, who now has, from his soon perch on the stairs, realized that maybe he should have boned his wife the previous night, and tries to come on to her, and she's not having it. As if the sign that he couldn't read the sign that she has come to bed with a green face mask on. But anyway, then they go to Glenn's terrible art opening, and she's got a terrible dress on and the banana clip that Sarah was so offended by at the end of our last episode. Then Glenn lures Cindy outside and this happens. Clip number 12.
How does it feel to be such a success?
Ugh,
I wouldn't know.
You are the most modest, conceited man I've ever met.
You're the one who's a success. No, really. You have a family, stability. These are all images here, except for you. You go home and I stay and I toast myself.
There are plenty of beautiful glasses for the great artist to clink.
Plastic ones. You get past a certain age, the great women get taken. I've worked hard and now I find myself alone. I'm ready to settle down, but I'm not willing to settle, Cindy.
It's too bad Jim missed you here in your glory.
You're the one that got away. We could be in the midst of a great adventure in the Himalayas.
Freedom fantasies. I could just see me riding on a camel or with a ring in my nose and bells in my toes. Jim would just die seeing me like that.
And then they kiss. Oh my God, the kiss, you guys. The kissing for so long and the music is not happy about it. Smack, smack, smack. It really goes on for a long time. I clipped the whole thing so you can see how long this old person kiss continues.
Which they're doing that TV thing of moving their heads instead of their mouths.
Yes, he really mashes his closed lips together on her. It's real good. All right, so go ahead.
Oh no, just their dialogue is just so smurfy. I mean, we didn't even talk about the scene on the bridge before, but he's like,
oh, yeah.
Do you ever play What If?
Uh-huh.
Like,
subtle.
Aren't you like bohemian and like, you know, shouldn't you know some, I mean, Jim's the one who comes up with the road less traveled reference later.
Yeah.
Do you ever play What If? Are you in fourth grade?
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
So Cindy comes.
Oh,
home.
And also Cindy's outfit is fug.
So bad. Well,
it's like a bridesmaid's dress made out of a sofa covering or
yeah,
a window
it's
treatment.
Such a cheap looking chintzy dumb print. It's really bad. I couldn't even believe it was a dress because it looked like a cheap like shirt that you would order from Land's End. And in the 90s, that was rough. So Cindy comes home full of, I don't know, guilt or thoughts of the road not taken, and she's standing out on the balcony that they have all of a sudden listening to music, and Jim comes home and turns off the stereo before he even comes out to see her, like, okay, I guess Jim's home, music is over for the night.
I know, rude.
So she comes back in, figuring out that he's there. And he comes around the corner in his sexless pajamas with the matching shirt, but open. Like, just don't wear a shirt. You're married. Who cares? And she's, you know, all keyed up because of the kiss. And we get clip number 13.
Turns out that audit should have gone to Bob, the more senior partner. I'm going to have a rough couple of weeks. But then maybe we can find some time together.
Jim, you've been saying that since we moved here. Maybe you just don't want time with me anymore. Just admit it.
Well, maybe you give me such a hard time. I don't want the time.
Aren't you even going to ask about the opening, about my day?
I'm tired, honey.
Translation, nope, don't care. You can go screw. Meanwhile, downstairs, Brenda has been pumping Kelly for information about how you can tell when your parents are going to get divorced, because obviously Kelly has been through it 3 or 4 or 17 times. And on her way out the door, she gives Brenda this parting remark in clip 14.
I forgot, sex is the biggie. My mother says that goes first.
My mom doesn't even talk about that.
They probably don't even have sex.
Oh, you and Brenda were immaculately conceived, right?
Having us was enough to scare them off forever.
I know you're joking, but it was! The two of you assholes would scare off anyone from trying again, I'm sure. Anyway, so then the next day, Brandon, this is where we get Brandon biting off the professor friend's head in clip 15.
Let's play some behavioral roulette. Tell me about what goes on at home.
Well, it used to be pretty cool for home. But now there's super tension.
Dad's just tired. And Mom's wired about...
You're as blind as Dad. You men, you think if you don't deal with stuff, it'll just go away.
Brenda, what would you do?
I'd stop it. I'd try and get Mom and Dad back like they used to be.
I'd butt out. Let them work it out. They'll be better off without your scientific meddling, and so will we.
Brandon!
Brandon stomps out.
Just one big happy family, huh? Why won't you talk about this? It's just like what Professor Strathmore said. You're scared to look at it. You really are just like Dad, so open.
And you're carrying on like Mom at her most unrelenting.
Sometimes I hate being your twin.
Ditto.
Brandon, I'm telling you, Mom and Dad are at this danger point. I mean, divorce is considered cool out here.
Look, all Mom and Dad need is a little time together and a lot of sex.
You really think they still do that?
Well, grow up, Bren. What do you think it means when their door is locked?
Yeah, well, the door hasn't been locked lately. And if they do split up, what happens? We switch off parents?
Hey, don't worry. We're stuck together.
Ew.
All they need is a lot of sex. Brandon, that's not for you to say, and don't say it.
No, God, and don't wish for it either.
No, but they go further than wishing for it. They put together a romantic dinner for Cindy and Jim that goes bust super awkwardly in clip 16.
It's weird how suddenly we can't even talk to each other.
Or be with each other. I have a vague memory of what sex is like.
Honey, what do you expect? I mean, you come home from the office and you're so absentee. Nothing is lonelier than being in bed with someone you feel alienated from.
Listen, I am in over my head here. I've been in over my head since we moved here.
Then slow down. I don't care about big houses and keeping up.
You think I like killing myself like this? And I know it's not as glamorous as what Glenn is doing.
Stop hiding behind your damn work.
Look, I brought us out here. I'm not going to let you down.
Honey, the only way you're letting me down is by being absentee from you and me.
Well, Cindy, it takes two. You're not exactly around here these days either.
Now whip out that dick and let's do it.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of mumbling what I'm doing.
Okay, did Cindy just get, like, absentee on her word-a-day calendar today? Because twice
in one scene. Yeah, that was so weird. Oh, my God. Yeah, a couple things. First off, just a tamp down this dead horse. In that last clip, I just wanted to say, not only did the professor get yelled at, she saw the two of them yelling at each other about how they basically didn't want to be twins anymore. So great job on that study. But coming back to this, so I just have a question about the logistics. Like, so they were at the university, yeah. They stomped off, they went back to school, Brandon came around for no reason other than the script called for it, decided to do this dinner, went shopping for it, made sure both their parents could do it, and Jim, with his punishing schedule, managed to come home at like 5 o'clock.
Yeah. And they're trying to do this whole meal and then leave in time to go and get their photos taken by Glenn, who lives in Venice. Which, so it's going to take like an hour and a half to get there.
Yeah. I have a comment about that too.
Yeah. No doubt. And the fact that, like, as if we couldn't tell that Jim was about to bolt when he's sitting at the dinner table waiting for it to come out, still in his suit jacket, like, don't get comfortable or anything. Anyway. So Cindy. I assume what you're about to say is that Cindy beats Brenda and Brandon to Glenn's somehow.
That and that she goes at all. Yes. I mean, she knows that her kids are going to be there. Is she not worried about appearances?
Well, speaking of appearances, though, the outfit that she chooses to wear to Glenn's for this is what she should have worn to his opening, because it's actually much more glamorous. Like, it's an all white look with like a, you know, sort of paisley wrap. It's much more stylish than the thing she wore to the art event.
Yeah, it just enforced her fish flopping around on the floor, like desperately trying to reach some water.
So she goes into, she's trekked all this way through a wormhole to get to Glenn's before Brenda and Brandon in order to tell him they have to cool it and it doesn't work so well in clip 17.
These are you.
The photos that he took of her at the garden center.
You spent all this time on me. They're so beautiful.
So are you. I'm falling in love with you.
No, Glenn, you just think you are. This isn't happening. I can't think.
There's no need to. You're already having a mental affair, and that's far more dangerous than a physical.
Glenn, what are we gonna do?
Haven't you always wondered what it'd be like to make love to each other? I've wanted to do this forever.
No, I just can't handle it.
I need to be absentee from this.
There's so much wrong that you can't see, so I made GIFs. But first is...
First the warble.
I can't see that in a GIF. But before they actually kiss or whatever, almost kiss, they just nuzzle their heads together for like 5 minutes. It's so weird.
Ugh. My notes... Was that her best take?
And when she leaves, Glenn is like left standing there and he crosses his arms like, I can't believe that didn't work. Furthermore, they've already established in this episode that they dated for a year in college. In all of that time, they never had sex? What?
Which is so weird, too, because earlier on in that horribly written bridge scene, he says something about her not being if she hadn't been with Jim. And she's like, would you have liked me? You dated for a year.
You dated for a year. You met Jim on your first anniversary. Read back in your script. Coked out 90210 writer of the late 90s.
Seriously.
Anyway, it's terrible. So the next morning. Oh, and the kids pull up just as she's leaving. Like, good job, Cindy. Please get better at being in an affair. A mental one only. It's all the more dangerous because it's taking up all your thoughts. Not thinking of logistics of who's where when. Anyway, the next morning she comes down in a man's robe just in case Jim didn't get the memo that she's not trying anymore. And he's sitting at the table reading, and we get this clip 18.
I'm reading an interesting article.
Sports or business?
University of Minnesota Literary Journal.
You remember when you wrote that piece? That was when we first met.
Frost's The Road Not Taken deals with unfulfilled dreams. I guess I've been feeling kind of frustrated.
I'm sorry, honey.
Don't be. I was a lot smarter back in those days. And look at what I wrote. Hindsight and regrets make one lose sight of what's important.
Okay, well, I think we know why Jim became an accountant, if that's what he thinks is his best literary writing. Not great. So Brenda and Brandon come down. Obviously, Brenda is still super pissed, having seen Cindy leaving Glenn's and assumed the worst. And then we get this, clip 19.
How'd the photo session go, kids?
Short.
A complete bust. Mother? Skip it.
Something we didn't say?
Gotta bail, Dad.
But what about something to eat? I mean, you kids always get nauseous without something in your stomachs.
I'm already nauseous. Lost my appetite, an uneasy thing to do.
Shut up, Brenda. I mean, she's right, but at the same time, shut up.
Yeah, it's like, this is practically the only time her snot-ass attitude is warranted, but we have such fatigue on it already that it's like, come on, Brenda, give us a break.
That's true. So Jim gets ready to leave and decides to twist the knife on his way out the door in clip 20.
I just want you to know, I really, really love you.
She immediately starts sobbing.
Did not know Jim was the inspiration for the new Carly Rae Jepsen song.
Oh, God. What if he is? So then he doesn't go to work. He goes to Glenn's in clip 21.
You know, in a marriage, if you're very lucky, you get 99%. But when that other one missing percent bursts in, it can feel like everything.
An illusion I'm quite enamored of. Look, I hate to break up this male bonding, but...
Stop feeding me meaningless lines. I know what you're up to, Glenn. I see what you're doing behind my back. Slipping in, buttering everyone up.
Pause.
Look, I happen to like your fan.
Freezing! Seriously, Jim, I thought you were a poet. That's the best words you could come up with. Slipping in.
Buttering everyone up.
Buttering them up. All right. Go ahead.
Respect it, damn it. You stayed out of my home and away from my wife. Look, this has caught me by surprise. Now, some of this is for Cindy to decide, isn't it? Cindy and I are in this together. If you want to finally grow up, then get your own damn family. But don't you dare try and take mine away from me.
Okay, at some point in this episode, Jim has gotten the idea that Glenn is trying to take the kids as well. Like, no one wants the kids. He just wants to bone Cindy. He wants to take her to the Middle East.
Such a salient point.
Put her on a camel.
I mean, you kind of talked about it with slipping in and buttering up, but I just feel like a lot of the dialogue, especially between Glenn and Jim, is stuff that was run through Babelfish and back. I mean... They're like the fifth word choice you would want. Like, I hate to break up this male bonding.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
Who would think this is male bonding even sarcastically? I don't get it. And the stuff before was so weirdly formal in the house. Jim's like, I'd love to stroll down memory lane with you. Like, yeah. Who says that to a college acquaintance / friend? It's so weird. Yeah. Anyway.
It's very clumsy. So, Glenn, after Jim reads him like this, decides, okay, I guess I'll back off Cindy after all. And I didn't clip any of this because it's so banal, but he goes over and is like, well, I'm leaving town. I'm going to Canada. Bye forever. And then he runs into Brenda and Brandon in the driveway, and we get this, 22.
Just want you to know you're a great family. You all really work well together.
The harpsichord theme song. They watch him get into his cool convertible. Again, this is not about the family. Like, it seems like someone at some late stage was like, we have to make this tie back to the kids somehow, because otherwise who cares? But like,
I mean, you all really work well together based on this episode?
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's nitpicky, but why stop now? He explains that he had a visitor from the better part of my conscience.
Yeah.
Isn't that just your conscience?
Right. Yeah, it's not great. and Cindy is just like, well, bye, even though, I mean, there was no reason to, well, whatever. We don't really get her side of this if she's disappointed that she's not going to be taking up with Glenn. Because if she did, it would be a very different show. So obviously none of this was going to ever last past this episode. But then Jim has had one of his trademark changes of heart. And we get this that dovetails right into a classic season one, terribly written, just fucking end it ending. And that's our final clip.
Are you okay? It's so early.
Actually, I'm just waking up.
Listen, Jim, I've got to
pack your bags.
Bags?
Kids, you're all right for one night, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your mom and I are going for our third try on our anniversary.
Third time's a charm. Listen, Jim, things happen.
You love me?
Oh, yeah.
That's all I need to hear.
Where are we going?
That was the most romantic thing ever. Even more than Romeo and Juliet or even Pretty Woman.
Well, I respect your feelings on that.
Oh, and I respect your respect.
Well, I respect your respect of my respect of your respect.
I respect your respect.
No,
of
no, 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 no. I respect your respect.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Cut! Goes on so long. Okay, what was with Cindy's "oh yeah" reaction like to their one
oh,
night?
Yeah.
This is one night the wall and
fucks Jim.
I can't believe
right.
He's such
like,
a great husband.
Like I've been whoring this whole episode, Jim. Why didn't you ask? God.
Yeah.
I mean, so much wrong. The most romantic thing ever. Like, broaden your horizons, Brenda. Please.
Yeah.
And before that clip, Jim greets Brandon with "hey guy." One step removed from bro, like which is kind of how he treats Brandon, honestly. Like, oh my god, I just don't get it. And the third try, did I miss, was the aborted attempt at sex after the gallery opening their second try at an anniversary celebration?
Maybe the second try was the dinner the kids made. I'm probably giving too much credit, but that was, yeah, that's a piss poor try if we're counting it in the list.
That is negative effort on Jim's part. Jesus.
All right. Yeah. Final thoughts before we go into our episode, most and least valuable player.
Just two things. One, that Glenn would not be a suitable stepfather in any case, because you can see in one wide shot that he's about a foot and a half taller than Brandon.
Yes.
And the other free-floating inappropriateness from Brenda is when she's complaining to Kelly about Glenn liking his mom, and she's like, "I'd rather he flirt with me."
Oh yeah, God, I totally missed that. You're right. Yeah, and Kelly's such a bitch about it too. She gets this line that's like, "All those women at the gallery, and he went with your mom." Like, oh God. Like, Cindy isn't a bad outfit, but she's not ugly. Like, give her a break.
No, it's true.
Anyway.
And this is after the fashion show too, when she looked great.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, let's wrap it up. MVP. John, who's your pick?
It is really slim pickings on this front this week, but I'm going to go with Brenda, because despite some snotty moments in the twin storyline, she's the only one who's actually clued into her parents' issues, unlike some people, Brandon, as I said before.
Yeah, I can't disagree. She tends to be right about all of this. And actually puts out an effort and helps Cindy feel guilty about what she's been doing. So I guess that's useful in the long, long run.
Right.
And right. Least valuable player. John?
I have a dishonorable mention for Donna, because she's shoehorned into all three plots and makes no impression in any of them.
She wears a really bad outfit to the gallery opening, though, which I...
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
She and Kelly really overdo it.
And her one line about standing out as fitting in is so smurfy and like, yep. Shut up, Donna. Mm-hmm. But my real LVP is Jim's pajama top for not spontaneously buttoning itself and saving us all from more views of the rug on Jim's chest.
Yeah, Jim is a real shitheel in this episode, I have to say. Starting from don't want to talk to you, going to do an hour's worth of accounting instead.
Oh my God.
To his bedhead, to the creeper on the stairs. Really all the stuff we've already talked about. He sucks and really doesn't deserve Cindy here or for the whole run of the show. I'll just say it.
I can't argue with that.
All right, that's it for the 17-year itch. We hope our sensitive touch didn't leave you frustrated. And we're so happy that we've all been able to be together. Join us next time. John will be back to discuss The Gentle Art of Listening, in which Brenda makes her first and possibly last attempt at serving the community. And Brandon believes he's going to, capital M, capital I, make it with an older woman. Guys, she's 23. Lucky he still considers her a prospect and not a dried-out husk. We will talk to you then.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.